This episode may contain content of a graphic nature, including descriptions of physical and sexual violence against adults, children, and animals. Listener discretion is advised. Hi, everyone. I'm Talia.
And I'm Tanya.
And together we are Crimes and Consequences, a true crime podcast. Everybody, welcome back to Crimes and Consequences. We have a really exciting episode for you today. I am Talia, and sitting next to me is my lovely host, Tanya.
Hi, everyone.
How are you?
I am doing great.
Well, that's splendid. I'm glad. This is the first time we've ever done a video for YouTube, so we really have no idea what we're doing.
Right. And we're going to have probably a lot of new people watching us. And I'm going to warn everyone that I laugh when I'm uncomfortable.
And so. I make really strange faces.
So just letting you know.
Quick background. We're two lawyers. We love true crime. We like to swear. And I think that's about it.
It's a good rundown.
So I'm really excited to share this story with you this week. It is a story about 18-year-old Kimberly Proctor, who was brutalized for hours and eventually murdered by two of her friends. Her parents, Fred and Lucy Proctor, they want you to know exactly what happened to their daughter so that the two monsters that did this to her never get released. In a quote from Fred, he said, "However horrific the details, they should be broadcast loudly so that perhaps the bleeding hearts of this country can be silenced and the actual victims of a crime can be heard."
That breaks my heart.
I know, it's really sad.
Very sad.
So for the information on this case, I read 510 pages of various transcripts. Some of them were teenage messages back and forth. And do you know what it's like to read hundreds of pages of teenagers' text messages?
I mean, I have a teenage daughter. I know you do too. But thankfully, I haven't had to read thousands of pages of it or hundreds.
Yeah. Teenagers. Anyway, I was one, so I can insult them. I'm going to give you a little background on Kimberly Proctor. She was a New Year's baby born on January 1st in 1992. She grew up in a middle-class neighborhood in the town of Langford, which is a suburb of Victoria in British Columbia, Canada. Never been.
Me either, but I heard it's lovely.
Sounds lovely. Her father, Fred, he was a diesel mechanic, and her mom, Lucy, worked as a manager at Walmart. She also had an older brother. His name was Bob. Now, high school was hard for Kim. I mean, high school's a bitch, right?
Oh, I hated high school.
I hated high school. Hated it.
Absolutely.
It was really hard for her because she suffered from ADD and she had a lot of anxiety and she really felt bullied. Like the bullying took its toll on her. And she didn't like to take her ADHD medicine because she felt like it made her into a zombie. It dulled her.
I've heard that, right?
Yeah, and like I said, the kids at school were bullying her, so she talked to her parents, and they agreed it would be best to pull her out of a regular high school and to enroll her in an alternative school called Pacific Secondary, and this was sometime in 2009. Pacific Secondary Alternative Education Program, it's for troubled teens or teens that need more specialized attention. And for those that haven't listened to our podcast before, I've told you, Tanya, that I went to an alternative ed. I had my reasons. I ended up going to law school, too. It turned out just fine. I mean, there's just reasons why people go to alternative high schools.
Not necessarily bad ones.
Not necessarily bad, just issues.
Right.
But, I mean, I'm not going to lie. There were a lot of, like, kids that had been to rehab, pregnant girls, blah, blah, blah. But at the beginning of school, Kim met a group. I mean, there's always cliques, right? There's always cliques in high school. So she starts hanging out with this group of kids. And she meets a boy named Zach. She really likes Zach. And she's dating Zach for a few months. But eventually, Kimberly and Zach, they broke up. And she began texting other people. Now, again, this is an MSN messenger. I don't know if it's called texting. Like, is that texting? MSN?
Private messaging? Something like that.
Okay, well, sounds good. Messaging. She began messaging another boy in their clique, and his name was Cruz Wellwood. And let me tell you about Cruz Wellwood.
I can't wait.
16-year-old Cruz lived with his mother, Nadine, in a bungalow on Happy Valley Road in Langford, which, again, it's by Victoria. He began displaying problematic behaviors by the time he was in third grade.
Wow.
He was described as defiant, and he was considered potentially gifted, but rude, arrogant, and he had a superior attitude.
That is quite the combo.
Well, let me tell you why in third grade he started turning into a little asshole. Cruz's father, his name was Robert Daswan. I think that's how you pronounce it. And he was far from father of the year. When Cruz was only 7, his dad was arrested for the rape and murder of a First Nations girl named Cherish Oppenheim. I'm going to give you a little background on what happened to Cherish. And finding out what Cruz's dad does to not only Cherish, but other women, that's just a little insight into what Cruz will eventually end up becoming. Cherish Oppenheim, she was in 11th grade. She was last seen Friday after school on October 13th in 2001. She'd asked her mom if she could go uptown and visit with a friend. And her mom said, you know, okay. And her mom dropped her off outside the 7-Eleven. But she told her, don't be home late. And Cherish was a great kid. Like, if she's not supposed to be home late, she's not going to be home late. That evening, her mom, she fell asleep on the couch. And she was worried because Cherish wasn't home. But Cherish didn't have a cell phone. And, I mean, I don't know what time she fell asleep. But she wasn't, like, so worried. But she just was sleeping on the couch waiting for Cherish to come home. At around 3 a.m., her instincts, she says, like, woke her up. And she's like, where's Cherish? So she goes into Cherish's bedroom and she sees that her 16-year-old daughter is not home. And she, I mean, it's 3 in the morning. She freaks out. She knows something's wrong.
That's crazy. I mean, that's late.
And that is when the search for Cherish began. 9 days later, Cherish's badly damaged body was found on a deserted road 13 miles from that 7-Eleven. She was nude. She was covered with rocks and debris. She'd been beaten, raped, and strangled to death. And Cruz's father, Robert, he was on the police's radar literally since she was reported missing. And there were two reasons for that. A, he'd been stopped that night after Cherish went missing in a van by a hotel not far from that 7-Eleven. And I don't know the reason why he was stopped in that van, but the police officers noticed that on his seat was duct tape and a knife.
Oh, you know, normal things that you would carry around, right?
On your, you know, driver's right, or yeah. passenger side seat.
Just casually have it in my car.
Some duct tape and a knife. And that's reason number one. Now, reason number two is he had this history of violence against women. In 1993, so this is 7 years earlier, this is when Cruz was just a baby, or maybe, I don't even know if he was born, but it's around the time he was born. He got caught breaking into a woman's house at night. He climbed on top of her, and he was trying to stuff a rag into her mouth. I don't know all the details, but she managed to end up calling the police, and he served some time for that. And only 6 months before Cherish was murdered, he was arrested for raping a woman at knife point. He was actually out on bond when Cherish was murdered. So that's how they knew. I mean, that's how they connected Cruz's father to cherish. Now, Cruz's father, Robert, he was sentenced to life in prison in 2002, and that's the last time Cruz ever had contact with him. And what age, like, is seven second grade? Oh, sorry. Is seven second grade?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And
so,
remember I said it was around third grade that he started having problems?
Yeah,
see, I mean, your dad goes to prison for murder. Who'd guess you're going to have some fucking problems?
Yeah, I guess that would cause some behavioral problems,
oh,
I
yeah,
suppose.
I mean, I'd be all shades of messed up.
Yeah.
Kids at school would tease him. I don't know exactly what to say. Something like, ha, your dad's a killer, I'm imagining, because kids are assholes.
Yeah.
I mean,
right. And so that probably caused, I get it.
So he ended up being, I don't know, messed up from that. Maybe he was messed up genetically from it. Well, I don't know. But it was only a matter of time before he ended up following in his dad's footsteps. It was in fifth grade that Cruz met a boy named Cameron Moffitt, who he was 1 year older. And they ended up becoming best friends. They were opposites in a lot of ways. Cruz was intelligent, he was a quick learner, while Cam was considered slower, and he pretty much failed at school. But they had one thing in common.
Oh, what was that?
They were both deeply fucking disturbed.
Oh, of course, because crazy attracts crazy.
Even apparently in fifth grade. Maybe that's why we're friends. I don't know.
Maybe.
Cam demonstrated concerning behavior at even a younger age than Cruz.
Younger than third grade?
Yes. He was about four. And most likely it was a result of him being molested. But he could just have some sort of crazy sociopath gene in him. Through the years, his parents, they tried to put him in counseling, but he wouldn't talk. He refused to cooperate with any counselor. He refused to take any meds. He would lash out at home. For example, he would always jump out of the second story bedroom window to the point where they ended up blocking it somehow. And I don't know exactly how, but he would cut himself. He would bring a knife to school and show it off. And I mean, this is elementary school. So, I mean,
the administrators had their hands full with him.
Yeah. And you can only imagine how it's going to get way worse, people. It's going to get way worse. In the next few years, the two boys became even closer. Like, they were like brothers. They both got kicked out of regular high school, which is how they ended up in Pacific Secondary, where Kim was going to school. They spent most of their time smoking weed, drinking alcohol, and they would play World of Warcraft. I've never played it.
Me either.
I mean, I don't think we look like two people that would have played it, but I never played it.
I know what it is.
But so I mean, it's a video game, right? They're playing a video game. I don't know shit about it. But they went from smoking weed, drinking alcohol, playing video games to watching sadomasochistic porn together.
Because that's the logical leap. They were, how old are these kids when this is happening?
I'm thinking they're like 15 now. So, I mean.
Oh, that's great.
And they're sharing their sexually violent fantasies. They also shared videos. Oh, I can't say this. Oh, I'm going to, though. Of bestiality. But not just bestiality, Tanya.
Oh, no.
Bestiality with dead animals.
Okay, seriously? Really? There's videos like that out on the internet? I guess I shouldn't be surprised.
Of course there is. Don't you remember we had that one client that was into, like, goat porn? And he asked me if that would affect his divorce. And I'm like, no, actually, you know, there's nothing they can do about it. If you like goat porn, you like goat porn.
Hey, great. That's fantastic. Yeah.
No shaming here.
No shaming. But if you're watching,
scenes, I was like,
if you're watching videos of people fucking dead animals, I do have a problem with that.
Specifically, I know for a fact that they watch a video of a guy banging a dead cow.
Oh, man. A cow?
Like, what if I said dog, would you be like, no. Oh, okay, that makes sense. Like, you're like a cow.
A cow.
I'm like, what animal's okay?
There's no animal that's okay. Not at all.
Okay, but, great.
Oh, my God. Okay.
They set fires. And
of
they got,
course.
Right. And they got into fights, physical fights with each other. and with other people at school. For example, I know one of the two boys took some bike chain and bashed it over the head of another boy at school, cutting his face. And Pacific Secondary deemed them to be high-risk students, I would say.
To put it mildly.
In February of 2009, Cruz had this WordPress blog. You know, WordPress blogs.
Yep, I had one.
Me too. One of his posts was titled, Early Warning Signs of a Serial Killer.
Ooh.
In it, he went on to describe the key traits of serial killers, which, I mean, you know what they are. We've talked about them a ton. He talked about animal abuse, fascination with fire, abandonment by a father, and intense interest in sadomasochistic porn. And this is a quote from him. The peculiar thing is I meet all 14 criteria. Apparently, though, meeting all criteria makes it unlikely for the subject to be a serial killer. I suppose only time will tell, end quote.
Yeah, you know, maybe I'll wake up tomorrow and be a serial killer. Maybe not, you know.
Who knows?
Who knows?
There are two paths. Who knows which one I'll take?
Really, if you meet all 14, you're probably not a serial killer, because I would think the higher score you got,
right,
the, you know, higher propensity to be a serial killer. But okay.
Let's see. I like to torture animals, start fires, sadomasochistic porn. I don't even know all of them, but if I have all these horrible traits, I'm probably not going to hurt anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so.
Sure.
In the summer of 2009, Cruz was hospitalized for alcohol poisoning, but that didn't stop him from continuing to drink. And he even experimented with sniffing gas, doing something with gas. I don't know what these kids do these days. I don't know. Back in my day,
gasoline?
We smoked weed.
Like gasoline?
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
Huffing? Puffing?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Sure.
Only a few months later, it was around this time. It was around the time that he got alcohol poisoning. Kim and Zach, they didn't work out. They fizzled. And Zach was in the group of friends with Cruz and Cam and Kim, and they're, you know, they all have these text messages and stuff. So Kim is, I don't know, pouring her heart out to Cruz because Zach dumped her, and she ends up going out on a date with Cruz. Cam is really interested in her, and both Cam and Cruz were wooing her when they found out that she was no longer with Zach. Cam was actually more crude with her. For example, he would text her things like, can I see your tits?
Charming.
Kim wasn't interested in him. And like I said, she was a little bit interested in Cruz, but I think it was more of a rebound thing. I know they met up once. They might have met up twice. But eventually she texted Cruz and said, you know, it's not fair that I lead you on. I really like Zach still, and I'm hoping we'll get back together. Something along those lines.
Trying to let him down easy, right?
Yeah. That dumping of Cruz via text, I think, and I mean, I don't know, but I think that was the catalyst that eventually led to Kim being chosen as their first victim. Cruz and Cam's already dark life, it was getting even more sinister than what I described to you. Like,
really? More than what you told me earlier?
With a cow? Yeah, even more. They began drinking blood and, quote, other bodily fluids.
Were they drinking their own blood? Each other's
blood? I don't know whose blood. Doesn't matter.
What's this bodily fluid?
Who cares?
I want to know.
Well, there's how many options are there for bodily fluid?
I know, not very many.
You can't really drink snot.
Are they drinking
sweat?
Urine?
It's got to be urine, right?
Urine?
I don't know why I didn't say urine. Anyway.
I don't know.
Cam ended up changing his MSN name to Necrophile Experience. That's lovely.
Yeah.
And they began watching snuff videos.
How do you even find a snuff video?
I don't know.
Please don't comment in the comments.
It's a rhetorical question.
Yeah, it's a rhetorical question. I mean, come on, really?
These
kids are nuts.
That's really bad.
Yeah, that's pretty dark.
And they would write each other in World of Warcraft about their desires for bondage, rape, and torture.
So they were chatting with each other in the video game?
Yes.
Yeah.
And their messages to Kim became more aggressive. I mean, they got really mean to Kim. I'll give you some examples. Cam told her that he was going to have a party and she was on his VIP list. When she asked, you know, where is the party at? He said, it's in my pants.
Of course he did.
Fucking asshole.
God, I hate these kids.
It gets even grosser. Kim asked if there was going to be candy and music there. I mean, she's trying to make light
right.
of this. And Cam told her there would be a really big, hard candy with a soft, creamy part if you pick and suck it enough.
Well, that's lovely.
Like, what the fuck is that? No. You know, she's probably like, she's probably how do you like, respond?
Oh, yeah, how do you respond? As a grown woman, don't know how to respond.
LOL.
It's just so stupid.
He continues pressing her about wanting his lollipop. And as she continues to rebuff him, he tells her that she needs to show her tits to the web camera or he's going to tell Zach, who she still likes, that she has been texting him that she wants his hard candy. And he's really aggressive in these texts. And at one point she says, you're scaring me. According to the Messenger transcripts, he wrote, quote, this is blackmail. You will do what I want or I will show him. Do you understand? Do you understand? Answer the fucking question. I want to see your fucking tits on the webcam.
Wow. Wow.
She doesn't do it.
Oh, thank God. I like how he's like, this is blackmail. Like, no shit.
Well, but she's like, I didn't say anything. And he's like, oh, and he keeps like trying to, he's like gaslighting her, trying to convince her that she did. And he's going to turn it around or whatever. And
she could just show Zach the whole thing where he says, I'm blackmailing you. It doesn't make any sense. These kids are stupid.
At the same time, she's also messaging Cruz, and he chimes in that he has a lollipop too.
Okay.
Teen boys, man.
I tell you. Oh, great.
She tries to change the subject, and she tells him that her pet rabbit died last night. And Kim is a huge animal fan. I mean, that's one of the things about her. She was hoping to volunteer at some sort of animal rescue something in the summer after she graduated. And so she says, oh, my rabbit died last night. Cam writes back, quote, you're going to die next, end quote.
Wow.
Then they write a whole bunch of mean things like, you killed your rabbit, you didn't care about your rabbit. And she's asked them, why are you picking on me? Cruz responds that he doesn't care enough about her to even pick on her. If he did, she would have already killed herself by now.
Wow. Eventually, I thought he liked her.
Well, that's because she dumped him.
Yeah.
So now he doesn't like her and he's crazy.
Right.
I mean, he's a psycho, right? He's a psycho.
Right.
Kim and Cam and Cruz, they eventually quit messaging. I mean, I don't know. It goes like for 8 weeks and they don't message. Then randomly on the afternoon of, I think it was March 17th, Kim gets this message from Cruz. And he's asking her, what do you do tomorrow? He says he's bored and he just wants someone to chill with. Plus, he wants to apologize to her. She writes back, quote, this is sudden and I can't help but wonder why.
Yeah, don't fall for it, girl.
He says, I feel you deserve an explanation. She says, I gotta say, when I saw your text, I was shocked and confused. Then he calls her on the phone and the two are talking. He says, you know, hey, do you want to meet? Let's meet in person. I really want to apologize to you in person. We can talk about things and smoke some weed. And he says, let's go. I'll pick you up. I'll meet you at the bus stop by my house and then we'll go to my house. And he knew his mom would be out of town. Now, unbeknownst to her, he had patched Cam in a three-way call. So Cam is listening, but while Cam is listening silently, the two boys are messaging each other on MSN, And they're discussing all the things they plan to do to Kim the next day. Cruz writes, quote, LOL, this is so funny. Let's jam a funnel in her. Pour it with water. When you're done, pour Drano in her.
Drano?
Drano.
Oh, man.
I'm going to rip her nose ring out and burn it. Burn her flesh. Cam responds, why not keep her bound and alive? Cruz says, that's what I'm going to do, but I need to get her stone first and possibly seduce her. I'm not going to kill her right away. These two psychos end up convincing, well, it's actually Cruz, ends up convincing Kim to come to the bus stop near Happy Valley Road. She didn't have class the next day, and so when she woke up in the morning, her mom had left for work, and she put on this black hoodie, had this number 13 on it, and she walked to the Langford Bus Exchange. Cam and Cruz, as I said, they were going to meet her there, but before they did, they went to the store and they bought some supplies. They bought gas.
Oh, no.
So they could set Kim on fire. And Cruz came up with a phrase that he would say so Cam knew that he was ready to attack Kim. The phrase was, quote, I think I'm going to make some KD, end quote.
KD, like the letters KD?
Yeah, but I guess that stands for mac and cheese in Canada. I don't know.
Oh.
Canada's just literally, we're from Michigan. It's just like right
there. Yeah, I've never heard that.
Let's make some KD.
Okay.
He planned on doing some sort of ninja move or something where he would instantly make Kim unconscious, but only temporary. Like, I don't know, something from
a badass,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right? Some mm-hmm. sort of, I don't know, Rambo move? I don't know. I don't even know. But, I mean, I don't know if he ever used it. I've tried it out before, but he was going to do some sort of ninja move. The three met up at 10:20 a.m. at the bus stop. They made small talk as they walked to Cruz's house. It was this small house. It's a bungalow. It's got a kitchen and a living room and a dining room, but they're all kind of an open area. Not long after they arrived, he tried to do that Rambo move, but it didn't work. Probably because he didn't know what the fuck he's doing. Instead, Cam and Cruz, they began hitting, kicking, beating, and, quote, hammering on Kim. Cruz yells at Cam to get the duct tape from the kitchen counter. And Cam takes the tape. He wraps it around Kim's lower legs and her ankles while Cruz uses some of it to bind her wrists behind her back. And then the duct tape is used to hog tie her.
Oh.
Cruz takes a black sock from his right foot and he stuffs it in her mouth. And then they take duct tape and they don't just put like a piece here. They wrap it around her head to her chin. Nobody knows how long she was brutalized, but I do know that she was moved from various places around the house. She was in the living room. She was in the garage. She was in Cruz's bedroom. And the majority of the brutality took place in Cruz's bedroom. And it's really brutal. Like, it's really fucking gruesome. It's horrible. A knife from the kitchen was used to cut her clothes. And like I said, they took turns raping her, beating her for hours. Her bones were broken. They acted out these sadistic fantasies. I know at some point Cam, he cut the duct tape from her ankles and her legs in order to make it better for them to sexually abuse her in various ways. And then he bound her with duct tape there again. Now, I read a quote from Kim's father in which he said that Kim's underwear was stuffed in her mouth in duct tape, but then I read like police records that said it was a sock. So I don't really know which one it was, but I mean, in the end, it doesn't matter. As I said, this assault went on for hours. We know that. And during it, Cruz's probation officer called him because, of course he's going to be on probation because he's
a piece of shit.
Thank you. And he didn't answer. I mean, and then there was a knock on his front door and it was the probation officer. It was a woman. she left believing that no one was home, not knowing that Kim was inside, alive, being tortured. So then Cruz does what Cam later describes as handiwork. And again, we don't know everything these boys did to her. We only know bits and pieces because they say, oh, over time, the truth will come out, but they never really say it. But Cam does later say that Cruz went about his handiwork. He raped her with a knife, cutting up her organs.
Oh.
A 4-inch lollipop stick was inserted in her vagina, and garbage was inserted into her rectum.
This poor girl.
I don't even, again, I don't even know all they did. This is,
this is only what they would admit to, right?
Exactly. I don't even know. Actually, yeah, they must have admitted to it. I don't know how we know that. I don't know if that was maybe because of the autopsy.
Yeah.
Because they really didn't admit to all that much. Some point during the assault, a plastic Walmart bag that was on the kitchen was put around her head and duct taped. She was still alive. We know that she was battered, bloody, and bound. But I don't believe it was that caused her death. Maybe there was a hole. Maybe they took that off. Because I do know that she was alive when she was brought into the garage and placed into a deep freezer and left there. While she suffocated in the freezer, Cruz got online and sent an instant message to Kim's account. He said, hey, I thought you had babysitting. Did you finish early?
He's trying to set up like his alibi or something, right?
Yeah, he's not with her.
No,
he's
not.
Reaching out to her.
Of course, she's supposed to be babysitting.
One of his friends notices that he's online, and he's always online. He hadn't been online for hours. That much we know. He had not been online for hours. So he reaches out to Cruz, and Cruz is going back and forth with his friend, and then his friend tells him something really weird. He says, I think my dad drank rubbing alcohol. And he's waiting for Cruz's reply, and he doesn't get a reply. 8 minutes go by, and he finally writes to Cruz, quote, dude, say something. Cruz replies, quote, sorry, my freezer was jumping around, end quote.
The freezer that Kim was in.
Yes.
These horrible little fuckers.
Once they'd finished doing whatever they, you know, did to Kim and she's in the freezer, they didn't want the party to stop. So Cam reached out to an ex-girlfriend of his and said, do you want to come over to Cruz's house and party? But by the grace of God, she said no. Otherwise, she'd be dead.
Yeah.
You know it.
Yeah,
I know
she
it.
Lucked out by saying no.
The next morning, Cam and Cruz put Kim's corpse in a hockey bag and they carried it to the Langford Bus Exchange. How do you carry someone's remains in a duffel bag and hop on a bus?
You're a psychopath.
Yeah, but how you do, like, I'm just saying logically. How do you hop on a bus?
Hockey bags are pretty big.
I mean, okay.
Because they're crazy. Talia, they're nuts. They're
like, look at somebody, they got this massive hockey bag. Okay.
It's normal in Canada to have a hockey bag.
That's true.
I mean, that it's not unusual.
That's a good point. They're two teams.
Right.
That makes more sense. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So they get on the bus, they've got this hockey bag, and they go to the Galloping Goose Trail in a city called Colwood. From there, they carry that bag to a spot under the bridge. They pour gas on her, and they light her on fire, and they just watch her burn. And they watch her burn. When they were done, they went about their day like nothing happened. Cruz, he ended up going home, calling some girl. She came over to his house, and he spent the day hanging out with her. Cam had brunch with his grandma and mom. And then after brunch, they all went to the store and they bought him a video game.
Oh, that's because he's such a nice boy. Give him a new video game.
Life was, you know, back to usual for them.
Sure.
Meanwhile, Kim's family's panicking. She was supposed to be home after babysitting. She had babysitting at 3. She was supposed to be home. And it was really important that she be home because she was going to start sewing her graduation gown, which they were really, you know, proud of. That this was a big deal. It was around 7 p.m. when a group of boys, they were smoking pot by the trail, by the bridge. And they noticed that duffel bag. And, you know, their group of teen boys getting stoned. They look at the duffel bag and they see this body. And the body was charred beyond recognition. It would take 3 days before dental records would confirm that that was the body of 18-year-old Kimberly Proctor. Most of the evidence that of Kim's suffering was destroyed, the bruises and the cuts, but there were broken bones and they remained. Of course, police start looking, family first, then the friends, and she's a teenager, so they're going to follow the digital trail, right? I mean,
look through her phone if absolutely. She had one, you know,
text messages, mm-hmm. all that stuff. So they see that she had, you know, texted with Cam and Cruz and spoken to Cruz on the phone, and they question the boys. And the boys are like, oh, we did meet up with her, but she left. She was only here for a little bit, and she left. Okay, all right. I mean, all you got to do is look at their history. These are high-risk boys. So obviously they were immediately high on the suspect list, but it took a while before they actually were able to arrest them. 5 days after Kim was killed, Cruz reached out to a gamer girlfriend. She was in Halifax. She's in World of Warcraft. And he started bragging about killing Kim.
Really?
Who does that? Like, what?
Makes him look cool?
To a girl? Yeah, to a girl he likes?
Yeah, right?
Hey, look what I do to it. Like, what is that? That's ridiculous.
I would think, oh, I'd be next. Right?
Exactly. So Cam joins in to their World of Warcraft group texting, and Cruz, according to this girl, actually bragged about how he put a knife in Kim's vagina and cut her organs. Specifically, he highlighted that text. He also sent her news articles, links to them, to prove it was real.
Really?
She writes him, quote, what about her family and friends and all whose lives you've ruined? And he wrote back, I don't feel bad for them.
Wow. So did she go to the police?
No, she didn't go to the police. What? She assured him that he had her full support.
Oh, your secret's safe with me, you psychopath.
I will support you. Yeah. No, I fucking won't.
No.
Deal breaker right there.
Right. Seriously.
He told another gamer, this was a boy, he said he did it because it was easy. And that person didn't come forward either.
See, that's a really insane thing to say. That's just a red flag.
A week after the murder, Cam messaged Cruz and he said, quote, since we killed that bitch and it wasn't too hard, we should do it again, end quote.
They're planning it.
Fucking assholes.
I love they're planning it through texts to each other. Bunch of idiots.
Time goes by. It's a couple weeks. Cruz explodes at school. He's in a classroom. He hears some students talking about Kim, and he yells out, quote, no one fucking cares. She's dead. Who gives a shit? I'm glad she's dead. I hated her.
Wow. Wow. That's, man.
Dude.
I know.
About a month after the murder, and this is right before they get arrested, Cruz has a new girlfriend. She's 14. They're walking, I don't know, talking. And he tells her all the details of how he raped and murdered Kim. According to this girl, Cruz detailed the torture. And he also discussed how he had strangled Kim. And again, that wasn't really her cause of death. So they just, I'm suspecting that maybe they're just doing all these horrible things to the point where she's almost dead, but not dead. And he also discussed how, in the end, they tried to finish her off by breaking her neck, but it didn't work.
Oh, my God. Did that girl go to the police?
No.
I can't believe none of these kids went to the police.
No. Not until they were already arrested.
I mean, I would have been freaked out. At 14 years old, and you're with this boy, and he tells you all this gross, gruesome shit. And you don't go to the cops.
She said that she still wanted to be with him.
What?
She's 14. I don't know. I don't know what my stupid 14-year-old ass would have done either. I don't know. I don't want to judge anybody. Who knows?
Maybe. I don't know. That's fucked up, though.
At least four girls ended up coming forward to school officials to tell them how Cam had rough bondage sex, and he was verbally abusive after the sex. And one girl even claimed that he date raped her a few months before Kim's murder. The two were finally arrested on June 18th in 2010. Of course, they're interrogated separately, and they were interrogated over a couple days. And I watched part of the interrogation of Cam and read the transcripts. Kim was so brutalized that Cam didn't even know exactly how she died. He asked investigators how she died. There were also a lot of questions in the transcripts about necrophilia. He denied having sex with her corpse. However, he couldn't rule out that maybe Cruz did.
I have a feeling that they probably did that too.
I wouldn't put it past them.
No, not if they're watching videos about dead animals. I mean, what's the difference?
Well,
to them. Right. I mean, I know there's a huge difference, of course.
Maybe after the episode, but we'll talk about the difference.
But of course, I mean, to them, I can't see where they would see it was a difference.
In trying to use words to describe what they did to Kim, this is what Cam said. Quote, "You can only draw the line so far with disturbing, horrendous, gruesome, horrific, completely disgusting and horrifying."
They're just not strong enough words, I guess, is what he's trying to say.
Yes.
Yeah.
He also describes the adrenaline rush he felt during her torture and murder. And I am going to play a clip of his interrogation. This is the interrogation of Cameron Moffitt.
"So when that's happening, what's going through your head?
Everything, a million miles an hour.
Yeah.
It's like, what the fuck?
Oh, yeah. And how do you feel inside?
The biggest adrenaline rush you ever have, because it's, what the fuck?
Yeah, absolutely. I can't imagine. I've had adrenaline rushes, but I can imagine that this is a huge adrenaline dumping."
He also said something really weird. He said that Cruz was bisexual and had a thing for Will Smith.
Oh, well, that's an odd thing to say.
It's random. Really random.
Irrelevant.
3 days after the arrest, the two were transported in the sheriff's van. They're going to go to their first hearing. I mean, in the United States, it would be an arraignment. I don't know what it is in Canada. So they didn't realize there was a wire trap. They didn't realize there was a wire tap in the van. They didn't know it was being recorded. And they're together and they're making jokes. They're making light of things. And it's just really gross. So here's a clip of these two in the van.
"Does my hair look better back like this? Huh? Or should I just like, because I figure if it's greasy, I might as well pull it back. My lawyer said you might be able to get tried as a youth because during the time it took place, you were a youth.
I know. Well, you're still a youth.
Yeah.
Showed me pictures, everything.
They're really trying to stroke my ego, tell me how smart they think I am, and, oh, you're so good at manipulating and things like that.
Really? They just made it seem like I got screwed over, and they're like, we understand, and I'm like, you
touched me. The entire time, I had this expression.
I just laughed at, like, half the things they said and just, like, sat there with a big-ass grin on my face.
I hate them.
What a couple of little assholes. God. Hate them.
We have a clip of them on their way back from the juvenile home. This is Cruz discussing his lack of remorse.
They're like, remorse. Do you feel any remorse? Any regrets? Anything inside of you? Any remorse? Regrets? Any remorse? Did you feel remorse?
Apparently no remorse.
Well, what the fuck was that? Remorse. What? That was a little bit psycho on that. The two ended up being in the juvenile detention center for a while. They did eventually get charged as adults when they were in the juvie. Cruz confessed to at least five people. But, I mean, I think he got off on bragging about her, obviously, right?
I don't even know
how many people he's told.
Can't keep his fucking mouth shut.
But he said it was Cam's fault.
Of course he did.
And Cam did basically the same thing, but he said it's Cruz's fault. The boys were described by other inmates, is that what you call them? In juvie, I don't even know, like juveniles, yeah. As being weird, not right, and showing no signs of remorse. I got to tell you a little bit more about what an asshole Cruz is, because I'm a mom, you're a mom, I got teenagers, and they recorded him talking to his mom while he was in the juvenile home. Her name is Nadine. And during the calls, he just berates her so much. So, for example, she gets him a suit, and he says to her, quote, "You did a very bad job listening to me when I expressly told you my sizes. Look, Mom, there's nothing I can do being in here. I'm relying heavily on you, and you have been failing me every single time."
She's lucky he didn't... He's lucky she didn't bring him a clown suit, because that's what I would have done. His stupid little ass.
What the fuck? Don't, you know, hello, you're a little disappointing to me. You're in juvie,
right,
for murder killing and rape.
Yeah.
In another recorded conversation, she tells him, "I think you should plead guilty." And he tells her, quote, "Look, just keep your fucking face out of it. I know what I'm doing. Understand that?" End quote.
Wow. I mean, you think he'd be nice to her considering, you know, she's probably one of the only people that will probably ever visit him.
Yes, Dad's certainly not, because he's in prison for murder, too.
Well, he's an asshole, so.
She says to him, and I'm paraphrasing, "You kind of seem a lot like your dad." And he says, quote, "If you're telling me that it's the sociopath gene and I can't control it, then you giving birth to me is the cause of everything in my life, everything I've ever done," end quote.
Basically, it's all her fault.
It's her fault.
Yes.
It's her fault.
Mom's fault, always.
He also told her that he loves his girlfriend more than her because she's basically a piece of shit.
Nice.
Eventually, the two teens did end up pleading guilty to first-degree murder and indignity to human remains. They were sentenced to life in prison with no possibility of parole for 10 years.
Oh, yeah. Because
it's Canada.
It's Canada.
Canada. Yes. You guys are so nice.
You guys are way too nice.
Way too nice. Both teens were transferred to an adult facility, and they ended up being up for parole in 2019. A psychological report for the parole hearing regarding Cruz described him as sexual deviant, a sadist, he had psychopathy, and indications of necrophilia.
Oh, really?
Nasty.
The psychologist could figure that out?
I guess so.
That's pretty bad.
He was deemed a high risk to offend, even though in 2018, he completed a high-intensity sex offender program. They deemed his improvements were minimal. He displayed violent behavior in jail. I mean, it was basically a little asshole.
Mm-hmm.
He would punch doors, punch himself, scream, pace back and forth with his like fists clenched, and pull his hair out. He refused to attend any emotions. It's called emotions management group. He said he didn't want to listen to other people's problems.
I mean,
yeah,
I kind of understand that.
I get it. But we have to do that every day with our job. It's a little bit annoying, but I mean, still, if I was him, I'd be
doing fucking everything.
I'd be kissing some serious ass.
Mm-hmm.
He was deemed an undue risk to the public safety and denied parole. Cam, basically, it was the same thing. The psychological report described him as a sociopath with little to no hope of redemption, and he, too, was denied parole. Meanwhile, Kim's parents, Fred and Lucy, they've been beside themselves with anger at the Canadian justice system. They feel like these guys shouldn't, you know, get any chance of parole. I mean,
Right.
They get out. I don't want to go to Canada.
Right.
And it's 45 minutes from us. And I don't want to go there if they're loose. He said, quote, "I'm at a loss of what to do now. I feel powerless. I feel betrayed by the system." They've been trying to pass what's called the Safe Care Act, also known as Kimberly's Law. It has not been successful. But that law would force at-risk kids that have a history of violence, mental illness, or addiction, and it would force them into treatment, some sort of therapy to, you know, try to prevent, you know, more violent behavior. Cameron and Cruz will be up for parole again in 5 years.
Lovely. Wow. Lovely.
Kim forever remains in the ground. So.
Wow, Talia, that was an incredibly sad story.
That was a pisser.
That was a pisser for sure. And I just, my heart goes out to her family. I mean, I can't even imagine experiencing that as a parent.
No.
You know, it's horrific. No. And these little fuckers just did it for fun. I mean,
they have no soul. Like, literally, I mean, you've got to be soulless. And even after all this time, there's no signs of any remorse.
No, none.
None.
Well, thank you for that story today.
Thank you.
Thank you for that story today. Yes, absolutely.
Do you want to share with everybody how they can find us on social media?
Of course. You can find us on social media on Facebook and Instagram at Hardcore True Crime. You can go to our website to find out more about this episode.
Pictures.
Photos, yeah. Like everything at crimesandconsequences.com.
Did you have to think about it?
I did.
You're like,
I did. Just for a second.
Okay.
We have merch on our website. If you'd like to find out more information about becoming a Patreon member or subscribing through Apple where you get bonus episodes, you can find out more information on our website or go to patreon.com/TNTCrimes.
Yeah.
And I'd like to give a special thank you to Speakeasy Podcast Network.
Yes.
That's where we're filming today.
Yes. Very first time ever filming.
I know. It's exciting.
And if you guys want to write really nasty things and try to hurt us, you're just wasting your time. There's nothing you're going to say that could possibly surprise us.
Please, we're lawyers.
Yeah.
I have no soul.
Anything else?
No, I think that's everything, Talia. So until our next episode,
don't kill each other.
Bye.